Now, the internet's changed just about everything, hasn't it? Online shopping's transformed how we buy things like books, clothes, homewares, even groceries can come up to your place these days if you order them online. It's so convenient to just sort of click and choose without even leaving your seat. And that same convenience is what led a guy called Ross William Ulbricht to create a website called Silk Road, an online bazaar where you could buy, well, very bizarre things. You could buy drugs. Yes, drugs shipped to your house, things like cocaine, in the mail to your house. Or they also sold things like fake IDs and weapons. It's recently been shut down. But the reason it operated for such a long time with impunity is because of a privacy program that's available to anyone called Tor, T-O-R, which stands for the Onion Router. Think of different layers and layers and layers like in an onion. Supported by the US government and funded by the US government as a way of dissidents protecting themselves against repressive regimes, now Tor is quite hard to break into, but another arm of the US government, the NSA, is bizarrely enough trying to do exactly that. To tell us about how people keep secrets on the internet nowadays and guide us through the virtual aisles of Silk Road, Stilgarian joins us now. He's a tech commentator for Crikey, ZDNet and The Drum, as well as many other places as well. Good evening, Stilgarian. Or at least it should be. Is my phone working? Stilgarian, are you there?
Oh, look, I'm here now. If you press the right button.
Yes, we've probably also got people listening to us. Who knows? Surveillance state and so on.
I don't think it's much of a difficult surveillance job if we're actually on, you know, the national broadcaster.
You make a very good point.
They may be able to find us.
Okay, so this Silk Road site, I couldn't believe that such a thing existed when I found out about it in the news. A bazaar where people would do things like...
Oh, naive man.
Yeah, they would order things like drugs, and it would come smuggled within things like books or whatever, but it just provided anything to anyone.
Pretty much, and that's obviously the reason that the law enforcement authorities wanted to shut it down, not only because it was a significant trading point for illegal drugs and even supposedly hitmen to ply their trade, but, you know, it's symbolic of anyone attempting to do a similar thing and say, hey, we can use the anonymity tools available on the internet to hide from you and make the internet into our secret playground.
I mean, it sounds like a movie still, that someone should just put in, you know, hitman, you know, .org or something like that and get someone to go and perform an execution. It seems surreal.
Well, it is, but in a sense, you know, the movies do depict things that kind of happen in real life too. And the internet being the global communication system that it is, there are people who want to use it for every human communication purpose. And that includes, obviously, you know, all of the jokes about how the internet was built for pornography. But when it comes down to it, funnily enough, the porn industry has actually been at the leading edge of a lot of technical development in things like micropayments for movies. Like, I wish to watch just this movie, so I just want to pay a couple of dollars for that. And they had all of that kind of, I want to watch this movie and pay this much, and I want to watch it now, and I have the option of watching it once, or I have the option of, watching it for a week, so if it's a great movie, I'll watch it later. The porn industry had all of that stuff in place and working. And I think you could argue that Hollywood and the mainstream movie and TV industries are only just starting to catch up.
Yeah, a lot of people say the same thing about the VHS video recorder being used for that purpose too. But still, let's look at...
So I'm told, yes.
Allegedly. Let's look at...
Yes, we do need to sprinkle the word allegedly a lot tonight, actually.
Yeah, I mean, this is all very much the subject of law enforcement, but I'm more interested about actually how it functioned, because Silk Road, this bizarre online cornucopia of illegality, that was detected a very long time ago, but stayed secret in part, as far as I understand it, because of this program Tor, which is one of the world's leading tools for keeping yourself secret on the internet.
Indeed, it was based on research done by the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory, as in the U.S. Navy, and by the strange quirk of American law, any scientific research that is done using public money, using taxpayers' money, has to be made available to the public for free. So, you know, any of NASA's documents and scientific reports, you can just get them from the NASA website.
So
absolutely.
Can I, is there like a instructions for how to build a space shuttle?
Well, not the plans as such, because becomes obviously a problem. Yeah, I know. But if you want to know kind of the specific formulation of how to make certain fuels and make sure that they don't evaporate on a hot day, and so the raw science is available. But then once the scientists have finished making the science, it's then up to engineers to turn that into actual machines and technology that people can use. So the technology then becomes secret.
So why is this Tor program developed by the US government and taken over by an open source community, I think? Why is it so hard to penetrate? We've been hearing with the NSA whistleblower, Edward Snowden, that the surveillance state is far larger than anyone thought previously in all those revelations.
Yes.
But Tor seems to have been a very effective way, at least in the past, of protecting secret information online for sites like Silk Road.
Oh yeah, and I should point out at this stage that there is no evidence so far that we've seen that the actual Tor software itself has been somehow breached. That the way it's been broken, or perhaps I better explain how it works first, and then it'll become a bit clearer about how it works. So let's say your DOM, so the letter D. Letter D for Dom, and you want to communicate with Alice, but you don't want Alice to know where you live. So what you do is you get your friend Bob, and you send a letter to Bob and say, will you send this letter on to Alice and put it in another envelope, and then when she replies, you take it out of the envelope and send it on to me. So you can communicate all the way through to Alice, but Alice only knows Bob, and you only know Bob. You don't know where Alice is. You don't know. She doesn't know where you is.
So a middleman, in a sense.
Middleman, a trusted middleman. Now add another middleman. Now add another middleman after that, and each time when you're passing it on to each intermediary, it goes into a new envelope with a new address on it, and it gets sent on to someone. They take the message out of the envelope, send it on to the address that's written there. That next person opens that envelope and passes it on.
So presumably on the internet, still, Gary, and you can have an awful lot of envelopes because it's also instantaneous.
That's right. And the envelope is really encryption. You're encoding it, and only the person who is opening the envelope knows that key, the secret key, to open that envelope and pass it on. So in the case of Tor, what happens is that any time you try to connect to a website, it bounces your communication link all over the internet between, well, any number of these you like. The trade-off is that it starts slowing things down, because instead of communicating effectively directly with the internet you want to visit, you are bouncing your communication randomly all over the internet. And every time you connect to a website, it chooses a different random path through this big network. So even if an organization, and this is why it's so difficult to break into, even if you happen to intercept that internet traffic, and even if you deploy all of the computer power you need to decrypt those encoded messages, or you somehow discover the secret key, you effectively open that envelope and go, oh, it's just another envelope inside, and that's one I don't have, and you go through the process again.
Tech commentator Stilgarian is on the line. We're talking about a program called Tor, the online router, which has been used to keep... the Onion router.
The Onion router.
Which is so-called because there are so many layers of protection wrapped around the thing you're trying to keep secret. It is also an online router, of course, which was used by the website Silk Road, selling all sorts of illegal things to keep itself secret. But still... one of the reasons why the US has been funding it and still continues to fund it, as I understand it, is because it's seen as very useful for dissidents. And during things like the Arab Spring, when people are protesting against unfriendly governments, they've used programs like Tor to stop regimes from spying on what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem, if you can consider it a problem, that all technology is actually neutral. You know, I can pick up a hammer and use it to use nails and wood and build you a house, or I can just smash your head in with it. You know, I mean, the tool, the hammer is a neutral tool. And Tor is the same thing. It simply makes it harder for anyone intercepting your internet traffic or the people at the other end of the connection to know where you are. And that's, from our point of view, fantastic if you're a rebel in Syria or you're trying to get around censorship in China or you're trying to do whatever it is that you might want to do. But at the same time, as happened with Silk Road, it enabled drug dealers to connect with people who wanted to buy drugs without them ever meeting.
Yeah, so, I mean, as you say, with the internet itself, these sort of high points and low points of the human experience find their replication online. But we now have this strange situation still where one part of the US government is funding this program Tor, which enables communications to be secret, because I think it will help freedom and democracy, and indeed it's been proven to do that. But another part of the US government, the National Security, is it agency or administration?
National Security Agency.
The NSA has been trying to break into Tor's encryption so that they can use it for instance, when terrorists communicate.
Exactly. And we run into this problem all the time because different agencies have different prime missions. And in fact, we've heard over the last couple of years a whole lot of things about, you know, making internet communications easier to intercept for law enforcement purposes. And when it deals with domestic law, it's actually there's actually a conflict in the United States between the FBI, which is responsible for things like organized crime across a state boundaries and serious drug dealing within the United States, and the NSA, whose job is national security and protecting America from its overseas enemies and terrorists. And whereas the FBI wants all telephone equipment to have some way for them to legally get in and easily create what Americans call a wiretap or what we call a telephone intercept, the NSA says, no, we don't want that because that means there is a way for international enemies to break into our corporate communications and we want to protect them. So they actually have behind-the-scenes legal battles over this all the time. It is a curious one. And then, as you say, the technology itself behind Tor was originally funded by US Navy research.
That's bizarre.
It is, and we have the situation where I think it was last year, possibly the year before now, when we first started hearing about mysterious nation-state actors hacking internet connections, that the Secretary of State in the US at that time, Hillary Clinton, actually announced increased funding for tools like Tor to make it easier for American agents and their friends to operate overseas.
It's a complex world still, Gary, and with all these different interests contending. So, well, let's take a bit of a step back. So there's different parts of the US government trying to fund this Tor, trying to crack into this Tor program. There are criminals using it and there are freedom fighters using it. And as you say, the technology is neutral. It can be used for good purposes and for evil. As internet users, how are we to feel about this? I mean, is Tor at this stage, as far as you know, still intact? Have the US figured out how to crack into the encryption of all the different envelopes you were discussing before?
From everything that I've read so far, which admittedly is not everything because there's just such a vast volume of material being released and analysis being done on it, it does appear that Tor itself is still intact. But that simply hides what your internet address is from anyone who is monitoring at the other end. And it does require that you keep all of the other parts of your internet behavior up to scratch, and you do what the spies call OPSEC, which is operational security.
And this is where Ross William Ulbricht, the man being charged with operating the Silk Road website, fell down, not
it's
because of Tor.
But he's believed to have fallen down on a couple of basics. What appears to have happened is that he needed a bit of programming help trying to get some aspect of the Silk Road marketplace working so it interacted properly with Tor and stayed hidden. So he actually posted his question about that on a programming forum, you know, asking for help. That's what people do. But he initially posted it there under his real name.
Ba-bao. That wouldn't work in the spy world.
Realized a moment later his mistake, posted it again under his sort of online handle, or one of them, but it was the same online handle that was used as part of the identifier on one of the encryption keys for the Silk Road. So it's, is this the same person? And then, really, it's old-fashioned police work, which got him an FBI agent, or more than one, it would seem, by reading the FBI's initial documents. We haven't seen all of the other evidence yet. We've just seen their first, the equivalent of, can we get a warrant to do this? That they had an agent in there, being part of that, making contact. And then once you start making contact with someone, you can start sending drugs or sending packages or whatever it might be. And another mistake that this guy seems to have made is that he did set up fake IDs, but still had packages delivered to his actual real home address.
Yeah, so if you're trying to set up a massive illegal marketplace on the internet, maybe take more care than this person allegedly did. And but still, it sounds as though the technology framework is still intact, which from a freedom fighter perspective is excellent news. From a law enforcement perspective, is bad.
Indeed. And the message, there are two messages out of this that I've seen so far that really make a lot of sense. One serious and one kind of funny. The serious one is really that operational security, that kind of security hygiene, if you like. If you're trying to hide from the biggest and best funded intelligence agency on the planet, which is what the NSA is, and the largest collection on the planet of the best and brightest mathematicians, then you have to get absolutely everything right. In fact, there's a great website called Hacker OPSEC, written by a really good hacker who presents at conferences about this stuff. And he, on that blog, goes into great depth to explain just how complicated it is to get this stuff right and how serious you have to be about it. Although, in fact, anyone who's watched a few episodes of that wonderful HBO series, The Wire, will get a bit, a flavour of that. The fun message, I think, though, is that the alleged operant of Silk Road was living in San Francisco in a shared apartment, and someone said, look, the real message out of this is that real estate prices in San Francisco are so outrageous at the moment that you can even be running a global drug delivery network and you still have to have housemates.
Property prices. It all comes down to property prices. There you go, still, Carrion.
It's a good lesson. It's true.
It's an expensive
the dot-com boom. Yeah, the dot-com boom at the moment, the second one, is in full force. Just the money flowing through San Francisco at the moment is incredible.
It's a fascinating story, though, the story of the Silk Road and the story of the Tor tool, which was developed by one part of the US government, funded by another, and trying to be cracked by the other one as well. Thank you very much for navigating us through the online bazaar still.
Oh, yes, the rabbit hole of the Onion Network. That's a very bad mixed metaphor of it to go away now.
Thanks for talking to us. Still, Gary.
See you back anytime.
Bye-bye. You can find his work at ZDNet, at The Drum, and at Crikey, among other places. You can find him on Twitter as well, at StillGarian.